The views expressed on the following show are not necessarily those of the guest, host, or SaratogaBroadcasting.com. Frankly Speaking is a production of Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated. And now the host of Frankly Speaking, John Frank.
Good afternoon, Saratoga. It's a beautiful day. I'm here with my co-host and the guru of Saratoga Broadcasting, Rick Thompson. How you doing, Rick?
Pretty good, John. How are you?
It was supposed to rain all day, and I see sun, so yes. It's pretty much almost...
So you bring up the sunshine.
Yeah, weathermen and attorneys, they're always wrong, and they always get paid. That's what I like about those guys. And listeners, this is our second week of shows here, and we have a great guest today, Carrie Warner, who I've known for a number of years. But before we get to Carrie, if you'd like to make a phone call, it's area code 518-290-6601 to ask any questions. Hopefully we can connect you properly. It's a lot of pressure on you, Rick.
All I do is push a button here, Jen.
Right. And for many of you who, because it is known, you might be at work, our website is www.saratogabroadcasting.com. Now, if you're not listening, that does not help you very much, but the reason we are putting that out there is because this is webcast, and all the shows are webcast. So I'd like to introduce my guest, Carrie Warner. How are you, Carrie?
Hi, John. How are you? Hi, Rick.
Good morning, Carrie.
And Carrie is currently running for the New York State Assembly. Is it the 113th?
It is the 113th district, yes.
Right. That was like a new district from a couple years back, correct?
It was. It was created in the last redistricting.
Right, after the census. Just as a background, I first met Carrie, I think about 10 years ago. I think it was around 2004. Carrie was the executive director of the Preservation Foundation, Saratoga Springs, or county, I don't know what it's called right now. And I was brought in as a new board member, basically, because I think I had an accounting background, so that always helps.
It was exactly because you have an accounting background.
Every organization looks for an accountant to be the treasurer.
Right.
Exactly. We feel very confident when we have a good accountant running the books.
Well, our Kiwanis Club just lost our treasurer, who has so many other things, so we're looking for an accountant. Uh-huh. Join our club. You want to join, Jim.
Right. And my whole life, I wanted to be a secretary, but I always end up as the treasurer. So I was, just from my standpoint, it was great to meet Carrie, because Carrie ran the organization but really helped the board. And, you know, I'd like to thank you for that, because we did have the same flavor for preservation. I own three buildings that were built in the 1800s, and that was great working with Carrie, which it seems like yesterday, Carrie, but...
It does. It does. And I have to say, your buildings on Broadway are absolutely gorgeous. You've done such a wonderful job maintaining them keeping them in good condition.
No, I appreciate that. So before we get into the assembly race that is coming up, I just wanted to kind of get a background feel for you. I mean, I did look a little bit on your website, and I remember from your run. Were you born in this area, or where did you grow up?
Yeah. I grew up actually in New Jersey. Okay. My mom grew up in Troy, and then she married an RPI guy, and then they moved to New Jersey, which is where my dad was from.
Okay.
Lived around the country. Went to school in Pennsylvania at Carnegie Mellon University, and after that decided I needed some warm weather, and so I went out to California and worked for IBM for 11 years in California in Silicon Valley.
So just to step back, you were in the growing up, the high school type thing. Your mother, what did she do?
My mom went back to work when she in the mid-70s.
Okay.
Got into insurance. We were living in Arizona at the time, and so she was in insurance and human resources from the mid-70s till when she retired in 2000, which is when she moved here, and then I followed her here at that point and took the job in 2002 working for the Preservation Foundation.
And in high school, was there any, directions? I mean, obviously, you went into the computer industry. Was it math that you really liked, or what was your specialties in high school and growing up? And
right. I actually started in my career as a technical writer working for IBM.
Okay.
But it was kind of interesting. When I was in high school, I ran to be the school's school board rep and was on the student council and involved in that way. And I sort of had forgotten that part of my personality. And when I was preparing for the race in 2012, I happened to be visiting some friends in Arizona, and I noticed somebody putting a big political sign up, and it had a big picture on it. I said, I think I went to high school with that guy. Uh-huh. He was running for Congress. And went home and picked up, when I got home, I pulled out my high school yearbook, and sure enough, there he was. And what was interesting is in the little notes that somebody had written on the in the yearbook, as kids do,
sure,
said, to Carrie, the woman designed to be the first woman president of the United States. And I was like, wow, I must have had political ambitions when I was 18, and I've totally forgotten about them.
Right. You have to give me the year, but you graduated high school in the 70s, 80s?
1980.
Okay, so you're the same age as I graduated in 81. You look a lot younger, but I throw the dates out there.
Right.
So, and probably, I'm going back from, I grew up with nothing. I live in trailer park, so I was 27, but it was really a tough time in mid-70s and early 80s. You know, there was, at least here in this area here, there was high unemployment.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's where you were. Just tell me a little bit about and how that affected maybe you directly or indirectly,
right,
politically.
Right. Well, certainly, seeing my mom go back to work in the mid-70s and the difficulty she had at that point finding a job after having been out of the workforce for close to 20 years really, I think really set with me a tone that I always wanted to be able to support myself.
Right.
And I have had the good fortune to have a very long career in mostly in the high tech industry, with a 5-year stop in working for the Preservation Foundation,
right.
And I think that more than anything really struck me is that I needed to always be able to support myself, and I think I think a lot of young women my age got that lesson as well, watching how difficult it was for their mothers to go back to work. And I think we still struggle with that. That when women are in the workforce and they step out to have their families, getting back in is difficult. And, I think we need to, I think as a society, we need to come to terms with how do we keep these talented women engaged and in the workforce? How can we support young mothers so that we don't lose their contributions in the workforce, things that they've studied and prepared for, skills that they've built? That interruption, I think, is very difficult financially for families, but also businesses suffer because they lose good talent. I think that is something that, I saw in the 70s and has been a lesson that I've carried forward.
Yeah, I think that kind of, dovetails with, my parents were divorced when I was very young. My mother took care of myself, my brother. I was the youngest of the three. And, we lived up here in Saratoga, but she would drive down to Albany Med. She'd leave 6 in the morning, come home 7 at night.
Right.
And, and so I always was kind of, I think, very similar to you. I was like, one, I want to help my mother. But the second thing was I don't ever want to be put in a position where I can't either be in business for myself or I hit 50 and all of a sudden I'm too old or things like that. So I always took, that's pretty interesting. I think it was a lot of that era.
I was going to say, I'm a generation up from you. And I hit my teens in the 60s, and of course those were turbulent years.
Right.
And coming out of the 50s where everything was ideal and, the perfect family and the husband went and worked, and the 60s brought a lot of civil rights changes, women's rights changes. So going into the 70s, women were just starting to get back into careers. And today, I think it's starting to go back the other way. People are losing their jobs so much today. And maybe you have one partner working and the other one cannot find a job. So there's kind of like going back 20 or 30 years now. And
I think the unfortunate difference is that in the 1950s and into the 1960s, you could support a family in a middle class lifestyle on one income. And today, let's be perfectly honest, you can't do that. You need two incomes to be able to support a family unless you are a particularly high wage worker, most people need two incomes in the family. And one of the things that I think has been on a lot of people's minds for a long time is that, we still have pay inequity between men and women. Women make 77 cents on the dollar to their male counterparts doing exactly the same work with the same qualifications. And that's really a family issue.
Sure.
If you have a family with a husband and wife that are both working, you want them both making the most money they can in their chosen jobs. And so I think pay equity is something that is is something we still really have to come to grips with. And the State Assembly has taken up the Women's Equality Agenda and has passed it. We're still waiting for the State Senate to get their arms around that and really address the pay equity question.
Right. Another question, I did notice when you've run in the past with the village and everything, you always talk very fondly of your grandfather. He was an immigrant, I believe, from Germany,
yeah,
and started a business.
Right.
Is it, I don't know. Tell us a little bit about that.
So my grandparents on my father's side emigrated from Germany. My grandfather came over in 27, I think, and my grandmother came over in 29. My grandfather was an engineer and came to the United States and started his own machine tool business. He had a number of patents to his name and built a very successful business. All three of his sons went into the business after that. And my father still operates the business today. And it put all of us through college, and it was great. And I think the lessons of entrepreneurship are that, you know, it is hard to get a job sometime.
Sure.
So you need to be able to either make a job or get a job. If you can't get a job, you should be able to make a job. And you're in business for yourself, and I'm sure you know this, that it's very difficult to go from one person sitting in their office as a sole proprietor, you know, mm-hmm, single operator, to having a staff, to hiring that first person. You know, I talk about it as, you know, the difference between going from bench to business.
Sure.
Right? You're smart, you invent something, you've got a great idea for a software application or a game or a tool of some sort, and you prototype it, and now you need to make it a business. That leap from bench to business is a big one, and particularly in New York State, it's difficult. There's
right.
a lot of different agencies you have to go to, a lot
Absolutely.
Of different forms to fill out, a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross. And, you know, I think that as we think about what is the next wave in Saratoga County and Washington County, really in the corridor from Albany up to Canada, we really need to be thinking about how do we stimulate entrepreneurship here in this area. What can we do to streamline that so that it's easy to go from bench to business?
Right.
You know, picture a one-stop shop. You get somebody who says, here are the five things you need to do, write me one check, and you're in business. If we could make that happen, I think we could really make it, give people get it so they can overcome that sort of mental hurdle about, I have no idea how to go into business. It seems really complex.
And you know, we'll get into it a little bit later, but it does seem, you know, being an accountant, New York State has seemed very unbusiness friendly. Like you said, all the red tape, all the bureaucracy.
Right.
And it does
right.
seem over the last, you know, I think when Cuomo came in, whether you like him or dislike him, it does seem that he has tried to push it so that it makes it easier to not lose businesses in the state and also potentially to start new businesses here.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think certainly we have started down the right path, but I would really like to see us step a little harder on the gas.
Sure.
My thought is, when you look at the research into why do companies select different locations to move to, there's a lot of criteria that a corporation is going to use, and certainly tax policy is one of those criteria, but it actually isn't at the top of the list. There's some things that come first. Infrastructure. Do you have good roads, sewers, water, good power grids? Do you have sufficient power? Can I get enough gas? All of the infrastructure investment needs to be in place first and foremost. Do I have access to a skilled workforce? Do you have good secondary education? Do you have good community colleges, good universities? Do you have job training and retraining programs? Can I get access to the type of workers that I need in the numbers that I need? Do I have access to raw materials? If I need water, if I need timber, if I need minerals of one sort or another, can I get access to that? And can I get to market the way I need to get to market? So can I get my product to market? And then at that point, once you have all those things in place, then they look at what's the tax policy?
Right.
You know, how will we, you know, what's... Are we going to be advantaged, disadvantaged by being in a particular location? And New York State needs to work on the cost of doing business in New York State from a tax perspective. But I really feel like, as I've traveled the district in Saratoga and Washington County and spoken to people in Warren County and the surrounding areas, that what we really need is infrastructure investment here in order to bring private investment. If we had the infrastructure investments in roads, power, water, gas pipelines, we could leverage, the dollars would flow, private investment would come here because we've got great quality of life. Sure. We've got good schools, we've got a workforce, we've got access to raw materials, we've got a transportation infrastructure, the Hudson River barge traffic connecting to the Mechanicville Multimodal Center, connecting to Vertrain, and then the 87 corridor. You know, we have a lot of the pieces and parts, but I think we really need to beef up our infrastructure, particularly making our power grid resilient and able to more of a smart grid technology, being able to meet the needs of high-tech manufacturers as they come in, and other kinds of businesses as well.
Yeah. Again, and Rick will probably say the number as much as I will, but if somebody has any questions, and Rick will take the calls at 518-290-6601. That's 518-290-6601. So you went from IBM to Perot to a little hiatus for you know, half a decade, and built up, you know, the preservation, which I'm that's what I know you from, and I think a lot of Saratogians and Saratoga County people go. And then you went into politics 2007 or 8 in that area, in the little village of Round Lake. For these reasons, basically, I mean, it's a different, and we're going to get into the assembly, but I just kind of want to, you had the subconscious from high school, you didn't know you were in politics, and you were, and everybody, sometimes everybody knows it, and you don't know it yourself. So that itch was there, you know, because I remember when I talked to you in 2004 or 5, politics really never came up, so, and then you jumped in, and I think you went against somebody who had been there for a while, too.
Yeah, so I've always been a volunteer, for as long as I can remember, I've been doing volunteer work. And so I've had a community service aspect to how I spend my time. When I was working for the Preservation Foundation, one of the things that I really valued was being able to work with people in the community. We would have some, you know, somebody would come into the office and say, "I've had a major fire in my house. I need help understanding how, you know, how to restore it. Who do I have to talk to? How do we keep, you know, how do I bring back a historic house?" And being able to work hands-on with somebody was really interesting to me, and helping them find the resources and connect with the right people. When I decided to go back into the private sector, and I left the Preservation Foundation in 2008 and started the division of a small publishing company here focused on software, I didn't want to lose that sense of community involvement and community engagement that had given me so much pleasure working for the Preservation Foundation. So in 2008, I did two things. I asked to be appointed to the Malta Planning Board, which I was, and I decided to run for the village board in Round Lake, and was really driven out of a sense of I want to be involved and engaged in my community. Luther Forest had been approved through the Malta and Stillwater Planning Boards, and town boards rather, but they had not yet started the planning process for the site. Having lived in Silicon Valley for 11 years, I really watched how the high-tech industry can do great things for a region, can really grow an economy, but it can also overtake some of the beautiful vistas and farmland that that we value around here. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be that person who complains about it. I want to be somebody who does something about it. So that's what motivated me there, and likewise with the village board, I just felt like that was something that a way that I could contribute to my community. So that's where it started, and I ran in 2008 against a 5-term incumbent and beat him at the for the village board, and now I've been elected to my 4th term.
And there's 2-year terms there,
2-year terms,
Saratoga Springs.
Yep.
And so. And you also started your business right around the same time, too?
Exactly. Exactly.
you don't like having free time, obviously.
No. No. I can't.
And like I said, you know, I just tell us, you know, a little bit about, because you still have the business.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, we're located right above Coffee Traders.
Okay.
I've got four folks who work with me up there. Uh-huh. We do online conference registration software.
Okay.
Most of our clients, we have clients all over the world. Many of them, most of them are large corporations, investment banks, and it's a nice business.
Sure. And so, and it gives you, like as you were saying earlier, that broad perspective of, you know, I'm in the political world. I've worked in the corporate world.
Right.
I've worked in the non-for-profit world.
Right.
And I sat there in the middle of the night figuring out how I'm going to make payroll world when,
right.
you have your
exactly.
small business. And,
exactly.
And that's great. So how did you go from the little, and it's small, it's probably the smallest a little, based on the village, because I just,
right.
you know.
We're not the smallest village in New York, but we're close.
Okay, but in Saratoga County, definitely,
right.
And,
right.
and probably in this new 113th district. So,
right.
so you went from there to
right.
a redistricting, and
mm-hmm.
It was kind of, with the redistricting, there was an election, and
right.
You went against right. a very well-known and respected incumbent, and
yes.
it was pretty close to break even. It was a very close race.
Right.
Why did you run? And you know what
right.
what I mean? You discussed some of your platform, but what was the reason originally for running in the 113th district?
Right.
Which is, I would still think, pretty heavy Republican district, and it was, like I said, it was almost a draw.
Yeah. So the reason I ran the first time, and it's really still the same reason I'm running now, is that as I looked at the challenges our communities face, I realized that we haven't had a really strong partner in the assembly for a long time. And, Saratoga Springs and Saratoga County used to be represented by Joe Bruno.
Sure.
And he was a strong advocate for things like the Luther Forest Tech Campus in Albany. And now we don't have that kind of a partner available to us in Albany to help with things like we need infrastructure investment. We need some ways to attract new additional businesses to the tech campus. And again, I thought just the same way I thought in 2008, well, I don't want to be the person who complains about how things develop. I want to be part of fixing that solution. I felt the same way, that I'm at a point in my life where I can do public service, and so I will do public service.
Right.
And it's really an extension of the community involvement I've had throughout my life, just maybe on a little bit larger scale.
That's it.
I don't know if you had a question.
Oh, no. No, we're just going here with some questions. I would like you to mention your website, if you could.
Sure.
That gives me a chance to ask you a question.
Okay.
Because I know I had visited it several times, and there's a wealth of information there.
Uh-huh.
And I know when you were on my show, I kind of studied it because we were in the discussion that the governor wasn't appointing anybody for us to have representation here. But if you could give your website out.
Sure. The campaign website is www.vote-carry.com.
Great. And again, our number is 518-290-6601. And I'm just going to jump in here again. So it was a very close race,
right.
You're running in a big district. What did you take out of the first race that, brought you forward to the the current race that we're talking
right.
about?
One of the things that I really learned in the first race is that there is more that binds us together than divides us apart, and that there are values that we share across the community, the 16 communities in the district in Saratoga and Washington County, that are really sort of fundamental. No matter where I went, I encountered people who say that home rule is really the most important thing, that the communities want to be able to decide what their future looks like, and that sort of retaining for themselves the notion that the best government is the government that's closest to the people, and that the towns and the villages should determine what kind of growth, if they want growth at all, what kind of growth do they want. And that was one fundamental truth. Another value that I found is that, personal liberty, personal freedoms are something that we all value. And that shows up across a variety of issues. education is something that we are all really concerned about. Everybody wants to make sure, and I think this is probably a universal truth across the sure. across the world, that our kids get the kind of education that they need to be able to contribute in a 21st century economy, and making sure that our schools are funded appropriately, that the curriculum is appropriate to the age and to the context. These are things that we all value, and it was gratifying to me to go from community to community and be able to see that these are the things, these things bind us together, they don't tear us apart,
right.
That we really are have a set of values that we hold consistently across the district.
Jen, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I just got a phone call, and a person would like to listen to the show on their phone, but we don't have the app, and I know you put it on your phone.
Well, you can go to the website, and you still can go to the website through Google. Okay. You can go to www.saratogabroadcasting.com, and that will bring up the website, and then you can just save it on your home screen also, and then it's like your own app, basically.
Oh, okay.
And you can go into it directly.
Okay, thank you.
So we have the gentleman who won the previous election. Mm-hmm. He decided he no longer wanted to get an assembly, or he ran for
district attorney in Washington County.
So my assumption originally was, all right, probably in March, because we knew this last year,
right.
probably we were going to have to all get ready pretty quickly. When I say we, both sides,
right.
Whoever's running. To have an election probably like in March or April or something.
We were all envisioning climbing over snowbanks to get to doors to knock on.
Right, and it would have been, and then you would have had a regular election again in the fall?
That's correct, right.
And so what I think this was what Rick was asking earlier.
Right.
Do we have a representative in the 113th district currently?
Not in the assembly, no.
Not in the assembly.
No. For legislative positions in the state assembly or the state legislature, when the seat is vacated before April 1st of the second year of a term, the governor can, at his discretion, call for a special election.
Okay.
There's no opportunity. The Constitution doesn't provide an opportunity for an appointment.
Okay.
It has to be done through a special election. This year, the governor decided not to call a special election. There were a number of seats open in the legislature, so there was no special election called. So we have been without representation in that body since January.
And have you heard from these other districts that have been open that don't have representation? Is there ever a thought of changing the state constitution to have the governor appoint or somebody appoint, or is it just pretty much this is how it's always been and that's the process?
I have not personally heard from any other districts. There were 11 districts without representation in either the Assembly or the Senate this year, which seems to me to be a lot to go with. It was close to 1 million people to go without representation in one house of the legislature or the other. So I personally would like to see things changed so that it's less discretionary and more automatic.
Right.
I think it's only fair. We're talking, the legislature sits the first half of the year. They set tax rates, they set tax policy. It affects all of us.
Sure.
And everybody should have representation. And, we sit here at the turning point of the American Revolution, and that was fought over the lack of representation when it comes to setting taxes. So it seems fitting to me somehow that we start that movement.
Right. I think I've actually, either online or through various, political sites, and whether it be Republican or Democratic districts, where there was complaints more than I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And it's a gubernatorial election that probably has something to do with it and the process. Again, if you'd like to call and ask Kerry a question, it's 518-290-6601. So when is the date of the election this year then, if there's no primary or anything?
Tuesday, November 4th.
November 4th. Okay. So, we're going to get into more issues, but just kind of describe the locations of the district, because it is a new district,
right?
And if memory serves me right, it was a little less Washington County and a little bit more Saratoga, but kind of give a broad outlines north, south, east, and west of the district.
So it's 16 communities in total, 8 in Saratoga County, 8 in Washington County. In Saratoga County, it starts in Mechanicville in the south, Mechanicville, Stillwater, Town of Saratoga, Northumberland, Moreau, the city of Saratoga Springs, Wilton, and Malta.
Okay.
in Washtenaw County on the other side of the river, Easton, Greenwich, Jackson, Argyle, Salem, Hartford, Kingsbury, and Fort Edward.
Okay. So not only do you have try to get business in the forefront of the district, but also agriculture and farms, because in most counties, that's the number one industry up here around the, you know, Albany North. And as we know, across the river, that's pretty much
very rural and
most of the industry.
Well, both Saratoga and Washington County are home to some very productive farmland and farms. Dairy continues to be our biggest agricultural product, and we've got some really innovative dairy farms in both Saratoga and Washington County. Farms like the King Brothers Dairy that are doing now home delivery, and then on the eastern side of the farm, the Bordens just installed a robotic milking parlor. So there's a lot of emphasis in agriculture on how to grow those businesses, how to make them profitable, how to make them efficient, and we've got farmers who are really, you know, these are solid businessmen who are who are thinking outside the box to try and figure out how to grow that business. We also have, you know, we've got a lot of new farms that have started, grass-fed beef, yogurt, cheese, organic vegetables. So we, you know, our area here is a very productive farmland, and you need only go to the farmer's market on Saturday morning to see the benefit of that to us. But New York State as a whole really needs to, I believe, continue to invest in protecting its farmland. Maybe a year ago I heard a statistic that New York State grows enough food to feed 40% of its population, but we lose 3% of our farmland every year. Mm. You know, you don't really have to be a rocket scientist to know that that's a bad trend. And we need to stem the tide of losing. You know, we need to look at why are we losing farmland and what can we do to stem that tide. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a number of reasons why it happens. Part of it is that we're not attracting young people into farming. Farming is a tough business, and so thinking about what would it take to get young people into farming? How do we make it so that, you know, there's affordable land for them to get into, that there's support for them to start the equivalent of going from bench to business? How do we make that happen in farmland so that young people who are interested in farming can get into it? You know, the challenge of the economics of farming is really tough. And so what can we do to make that so that our farmers can get to market better and reach bigger markets?
We have a phone call.
We have a phone call.
Let's see if it works.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, caller.
Hello.
Do you have a question for Carrie?
Yes, I do.
All right. Go right ahead.
Okay. Our upstate school districts appear to be underfunded compared to downstate school districts. Do you see this as a problem? And what are your feelings about gap elimination?
Mm-hmm. You know, our upstate schools, particularly in the poorer rural areas, are underfunded. The formula that the state uses to determine to allocate funding sets a floor on just how poor you can be, and it really doesn't matter what the realities are.
Sure.
The state sets a floor, and that means that for our poorer rural districts, they are chronically underfunded. Personally, I think we should eliminate the gap elimination adjustment. Schools should be given back the money that was taken away from them when they ponied up in order to close the general fund budget.
Right.
Money, now that we've got a surplus, that money should be given back to the school districts. Thank you for your question.
Thank you, caller.
No, that's a good point. And just most people, I'm sure, are aware, but for the assembly district, the assembly itself is, you know, very heavily Democratic, and the assembly people, men or women that have been here, because it was the district before was almost impossible to win for a Democrat,
right?
And it's still difficult, but you've done a great job the first time around. But I don't know if this is the right question or not, but wouldn't a Democrat have a little bit more pull because it's easier to get a vote versus being a Republican in a very heavily Democratic assembly to help the district? Or that really you don't think comes into play too often?
You know, certainly there's always more to be gained by being in the majority than in the minority. You have access to different resources in whatever level of government. That is a true statement. You know, I think that what we really need to do is build an upstate coalition. That upstate New York, the corridor from Albany to Canada, drives a substantial economic benefit to New York State. Whether that economic benefit is measured in high-tech investment, in agriculture, in raw materials. If you go from Albany to Canada, we are a very productive part of the state. And I think establishing that coalition helps to educate people about the value that our part of the state delivers to the rest of the state. And I think that, to me, is what where we really need to focus. Certainly, if I'm fortunate enough to be elected, I would be in the majority, and that has some advantages. But I think the big advantage is that I bring an understanding of what's really unique about our region, the economy of our region, and how it impacts New York State. And I also bring a bipartisan sensibility that, to me, what's most important is that our region be represented effectively as a whole in the legislature, which means forming partnerships with Republicans and Democrats, senators and assembly members, creating a bicameral, bipartisan coalition that can represent in the totality the opportunity and the impact that we have on the state, and making sure that we get the kind of investment that we need to drive further value. And that goes back to a conversation about infrastructure.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. I'll tell you why. I think politics has always been a two-party system, Republicans against Democrats. But it's getting to the point now where we are going to have to start working together. We're going to have to start breaking down some of those barriers, right? Because we have to make sure that New York State is going to be viable in the future. I mean, like you had said earlier, we have to change our image to being business friendly. And the only way we're going to do that is to work together.
Absolutely. You know, these are partnerships that have to be built between towns and cities and counties and businesses and party. You know, I respect the differences between the parties, mm-hmm. But the thing that has to be most important in everybody's mind is, what is our goal? What is our goal? Let's set the goal. Our goal is to grow this region, to make agriculture a viable business for the next generation of farmers. Our goal is to bring our schools up so that they can meet the needs of a 21st century economy. These are our goals. Let's stay focused on the goals and put together the group of people we need to make that happen.
And that's not an alien, that's a caller. So we'll have
that is a caller. Good afternoon, caller.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Okay, you taking questions right now?
We're taking a question, and Carrie's waiting with bated breath for it.
All right. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
I have many friends that are small business owners, and they seem to constantly complain about the red tape and bureaucracy. What would you be doing to help cut some of that red tape and bureaucracy for small businesses?
Yeah.
Thank you for the call.
Yes, thank you so much. You know, I hear this. I hear this from people all the time. That they get into business and they've got, you know, too many inspections that they allow, too many that they have to live with, too many papers they have to fill out. That it's problematic, and certainly there has been a cataloging of these mandates. We call for a while we called them unfunded mandates,
right.
Both for the for governments, but also for businesses. And I think that that laundry list becomes a little overwhelming, and so people are like, oh, it's too long, let's do nothing. And my thought is, okay, no, let's take three. Let's take just three of them, the three that seem most egregious, and let's just work on three. If we can get three done, that's great. We'll go on to the next three. And, you know, some of the ones that I think are worth working on is if you have a business that has multiple agencies that will come out and do an inspection, we ought to have one inspection, not two. Have a coordinated review so that you can, you know, you only have to deal with setting an appointment with one inspector, one checklist of things you have to be able to provide documents on. Just streamline that process a little bit. I just think that that respects the time of the that the small business owner has, because, you know, all the time they have to spend doing that is time that they're not spending on their business. It's not that it's not important, but let's try and do it in a more streamlined way. Things like, it used to be that when you submitted your sales tax reports, you just didn't really matter whether it was credit card or cash or check. You just listed your tax collected. Now you have to break it out, so it's just more paperwork. Right. Let's bring it back to something that is rational and simple. My favorite one is the I'm not gonna remember its technical term, theft of honest wages or something. Where now every business owner has to fill out a piece of paper for each of their employees each year to say, here's your name, here's how much you should get in your paycheck. There's a question on the bottom that says, is English your first language? You have to fill that out. You have to sign it. Your employee has to sign it. You have to keep it on file. You know, I'm not sure why we do this. I did a little digging around, and it turns out we do this because in New York City there was a problem that restaurant workers were not actually receiving in their paycheck what they thought they should. So we put this law in place, which covers every small business owner all throughout New York State, even though the problem was really localized in one area. Right. And that kind of one-size-fits-all policymaking has happened in a variety of different ways all through throughout the state. So I think those are the kinds of things that we can just bring some rationality back to it. That will help.
Right. I fought the condo law here because New York City makes a lot of sense. Once you get upstate, it's a very unfair rule. Right. Again, we have about 10-15 minutes left, but I'm going to go through more like issues and things. But again, our phone number is 518-290-6601. We're lucky enough to have Kerry Warner here, who's running for the 113th Assembly District. You spoke a lot about Washington County, and again, it's the economy. We have farming, obviously, in both counties. I'm friends with a lot of the farmers up Northumberland area, the King family, and whatever. But there's a big difference between the two counties currently. I mean, Saratoga County, over the last 10 years, and I grew up here, and I know when it was bad.
Right.
When I was a kid, we used to go to Schuylerville to go shopping because Saratoga Springs was in big trouble in the early 70s.
Right.
And we used to go to Greenwich. Greenwich was, flourishing at the time. The whole Hudson River corridor was still somewhat strong. Mechanicville.
Right.
And then, you know, economic times have gotten much more difficult for those areas, and for various reasons, Saratoga County has really flourished, especially the last decade.
Right.
What do you find are the biggest issues currently in Saratoga? And I think Saratoga County is probably about, of this election district, maybe like 75% of it or so.
About two-thirds.
Yeah, two-thirds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have growth, and is it too much growth? But give us some of the issues that you're hearing from going door to door and going to, you know, the chicken dinners and all the other various things as a politician has to go to. What are you hearing in Saratoga County, the pluses and the minuses, and, you know, obviously Racino's out there and the fab plant. But
You know, I think definitely jobs in the economy are number one on everybody's mind. It's a, you know, as Rick mentioned earlier, you still find people who have, a family where one partner's working and the other has lost their job and is having trouble getting back into the workforce. You have families whose kids have come back from college and are struggling to find a job in their chosen field. You have a lot of families who are getting by on you know, everybody's got two jobs that they're working. So certainly jobs, good paying jobs, careers is, there's a little, I think people have a different, you know, when I got out of college, you were supposed to have a 30-year career with IBM.
Right.
That was the idea.
Get your pension and retire.
Exactly. That doesn't happen anymore. But still that notion of working in a field, getting increasing levels of responsibility, making more money, these kinds of things people are really struggling with here. So I think that that's an issue on everybody's mind. What can we do to create better jobs, better paying jobs? What mix of bringing big companies like GlobalFoundries in, growing small businesses around that, starting, encouraging entrepreneurship, getting young people excited about starting their own business and growing an entrepreneurial class. These are things that people are sort of really struggling with. Is how do we get that going a little bit better? It gets better every year. I think people are a little more positive in 2014 than they were in 2012. But it's
still
fundamentally
on
everybody's mind.
You know, as far as, we talk about jobs and kids getting out of college with a master's degree, and they can't get a job even at McDonald's. So what do? They go back home and live with their parents.
Right.
And but there's one thing that's overlooked, and I think that's a program in high school, the BOCES program, where kids, not every kid is cut out to go to college. And our trades are suffering. And if we had more kids going into the trades, they could come out and be business owners with fantastic jobs.
Yes. You know, it is that you make a really good observation, Rick. And what I have discovered is that BOCES, the trade education, those programs are not as heavily funded as they once were and probably should be. And so we have the unions stepping up to provide that kind of trade education, internships, apprenticeships. Local 773, which is the plumbers and steam fitters, they're now in Queensbury. They used to be in Moreau.
Right.
They have an amazing training facility to train young men and women who want to get into clean room and the high-tech work in GlobalFoundries. They're really doing a lot of that training. And, of course, Hudson Valley Community College also has their high-tech manufacturing program. But you're absolutely right that type of education is one that we seem to have kind of lost a little bit of track of, that in the emphasis to give everybody access to a four-year college degree, which is a great, noble thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've kind of lost sight of the fact that for some kids, that's not an option they would choose. That their skill set, their interests, their passions lie in a different place. And as a friend of mine from Salem, New York, says, try and find a plumber in this town.
Exactly.
These are good businesses that create middle class and upper middle class jobs.
Right.
And
$85 an hour. I mean, I'm just going through. We lost our furnace and our central air conditioner on Friday, on Monday, and today we're having them placed in, and the very good paying jobs. And these guys, I got talking with them. They didn't want to go to college. They took BOCES programs in high school and a plumbing program and electrical program, and they're still working today.
Yeah.
I think we have different areas that we have to key in on as far as education goes.
We do. Absolutely, you're right about that.
And your background originally out of school was in the high-tech area. And so tell us, I mean, we spoke a little bit about, but not too much about GlobalFoundries and where you see our area when you get an office and what would you bring to that? And I think Hudson Valley and obviously, yep, Suny-Albany has you know, yeah. some various things going.
We have a call.
Oh, you have a call? I'm sorry. I didn't hear the ding this time. So
that's
look,
right.
Go ahead.
I turned the volume down so that it wouldn't bother Carrie when she was talking.
We'll get back to that in a second, Carrie.
Go ahead. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
See, I tricked you. It's afternoon. And I forgot it, too. You have a question for Carrie?
I do. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
So my question is, I live in a pretty small village, and our infrastructure is really aging. So we just can't support or sustain any commercial growth at all. And I was wondering if this is really just our village, or is this across the district that you're seeing that problem?
Yeah.
Good question.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
You know, I see it all over the district that that what is holding back private investment is that the public infrastructure, sewers, water, roads, are not sufficient to sustain growth. And, you know, in one of the villages that I was in, their restaurants and food-oriented businesses have had to close because they needed to expand the number of hours that they could be open in order to make the business viable.
Right.
But because of the septic capacity, the Department of Health said you can't expand your hours.
Right.
So we are, the kind of infrastructure investment that's needed is much bigger than any town or village could support. And so we really need a partner in the state that's going to help fund that infrastructure work. And that will drive private investment. In the little story, the little vignette I just told you, those people were investing in their building, in their business, but they didn't, the town just couldn't sustain it. So it is absolutely true, and it's true across all of the, not just the villages, but the towns and the cities as well.
Yeah, even in Saratoga Springs, as has blossomed over the years, when you go in the off exit 13 up, we don't have a sewer line there. So everybody, and I think the largest septic system in Saratoga County is actually right over by the Plainmoor Hotels over there.
Right.
Yep. And the cost was millions upon millions and millions to run it down and then have the pump sewage right back up. So that is a corridor, and we do like it green, but some of the businesses go back 100, buildings 100 plus years there.
Right.
And they come, and, we did a gaps committee thing, which was South Broadway. We were looking at that, and they were just like, we're paying the same amount of taxes as everybody. Why can't you help us out? And so I can imagine that's happening in a segment of Saratoga Springs. It's got to be brutal, even like for a city of Mechanicville and Stillwater and these little villages throughout Saratoga County.
Yeah, I mean, the town of Moreau is looking at, they'd like to do a sewer project up Route 9 to develop that Route 9 corridor going into Moreau and South Glens Falls. And, it's a challenge for any community.
So the funding you're talking about potentially would be coming from the state, because mostly these are county funding to do this, to do these different infrastructure needs, or is there federal flow-through funding to the state?
Depends on the project, but, definitely it is, you need an infrastructure bank, an infrastructure fund at the state level, whether that's a block grant from the feds or developed at the state level, that communities can have access to either as a grant or on a low interest revolving loan basis to fund these projects. Because it's not, you're never going to be able to fund it out of local tax revenue. It's just too big.
It was just too expensive.
Right.
How about what's your take on the same vein with the small towns and sharing services as far as if they're close to each other, like ambulance and volunteer fire, but when one village wants to do a project, mm-hmm. it would probably be cheaper for the village right next to it, if they need the same thing, to do it at the same time. The cost would probably be less than if they did it separately.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, local governments, and actually this happens sort of on a regular basis,
sure.
that local governments look for economies of scale and economies of scope by, working with their neighbors to say, hey, we need, we want to take care of this project. If we did, do you have a similar need? If we did this at the same time, could we get this done in a more efficient manner?
Mm-hmm.
I think that happens, but I think it also has to be, we always have to be thinking about that. It's true in business, you know, that you're always looking for who can I partner with to make to get this done in a more efficient manner. That I want to expand the scope, or I need to expand the scale in order to get efficiencies. So that does have to happen, both in the municipalities, but also schools, looking at what can you do to reduce the cost of a school district. There's absent getting rid of a physical building, it's pretty hard to find efficiencies within a school. But thinking about, well, what can we do differently? How could we, you know, how can we use technology to share resources across a school district, so we're not, you know, maybe we can't staff an AP physics class in this high school, but if we use technology and combine the classrooms electronically, we could have one teacher teaching.
Mm-hmm. And that's both sections. Kind of what I was getting to earlier with your background there and the tech fed and the new jobs, but your technology background. Yeah. So technology obviously is going to be a very important part when you get an office to kind of get a synergistic effect. Because it's very hard to get these, it's very parochial here. And I always give the example of Mechanicville and Stillwater, where they have a Price Chopper that's half in Mechanicville and half in Stillwater. Uh-huh. And like cookies that they sell are one side and the other side, because it goes back to when they, you know, play football and baseball games. They won't buy the there's certain cookies there. I mean, I you know, like Stillwater's in the system with the county, the water system. Mechanicville will not do it. So that's obviously a tough time. Carrie, we had about 4 or 5 minutes left, and I still have 150 questions to ask you. So, you know, hopefully we, you know, when you get some time down the road, we'd love to have you back. But just, you know, with the last 5 minutes, other pressing issues, platform issues, I you know, kind of want to give you I know you've hit some of them, but I don't believe in them all. What's some other issues that you can bring up that you think are important in this 113th Assembly District? And, you know, jobs, obviously, we discussed, but, you know, additional things?
You know, I think that the... You know, one of the things that I have observed is that we have a tendency in New York State to craft these one-size-fits-all laws that solve a problem effectively for one region. Typically, it's the New York metropolitan area, but create other problems when you get to upstate. And we've got to, you know... We've got to bring a little more sensitivity to the notion that we're one state, but we've got different needs. That the needs of a big urban area, a heavy suburban area, are very different from the needs of the upstate communities. That our culture is different, and laws have to be respectful of that. And I think that's you know, while you know, it's not an issue the same way infrastructure investment is an issue. I do think that bringing that sensibility to my role as a state legislator would be a real priority for me. That the interest, the culture that makes upstate unique, that makes us have such great quality of life, that binds us together, that sense of personal liberty, personal freedoms, that sense that. The best government is the one that's closest to the people that are being governed. That sensibility is one that I think needs to be brought back to Albany. And while it can't be categorized as an issue the same way pay equity is, or infrastructure investment or education, and I think that those principles are ones that really deserve some airtime, and we need to focus on with the state legislature, that we are an important integral part of the economy of New York State, and we have our own culture and our own interests and needs, and those have got to be respected.
Yeah, I remember when I first started in the accounting field, and I graduated college in 1985, and you brought up sales tax, and you hit it dead on of how the things have even changed on that. And cleaning businesses, and we had a client who was a commercial cleaner, and I had to break down all the sales tax, because if they cleaned a building that had more than five stories, you had to charge. Now everybody's sales tax with cleaning, but back then, if you cleaned a building that had more than five stories, you had to charge sales tax. If it had less than five stories, you didn't have to charge sales tax. So I went to Sidney Roth, my first boss, and I'm like, I'm not that bright, but I don't get this. And he said, it's all New York, it's because they do the one-fit law. And in New York City, most structures are five or more stories.
Right.
So they're trying to help residents that are not five stories, or, you know, smaller commercial buildings. because, you know, in Saratoga Springs at the time, you probably only, I don't know how many more than five-story buildings you have. I mean, only have four here. Maybe.
Right.
So it's that type of thing that just seems so ridiculous.
Right.
Yet to carve that out and have, you know, just, and I know they have laws that are just, you know, the New York City area.
Right.
And they do have different, and that's sort of probably what people are telling you about home rule.
Right, exactly. You know, that carving out, a carve out for rural communities makes some sense. And even though Saratoga Springs is a little more urban than it is rural, we sit in a rural area. Carving that out and understanding the differences between what a big major metropolitan area needs versus small cities and towns need.
Right. Well, I really appreciate having Carrie here today. It was very nice that you're coming on such short notice. You know, we got a lot into your history. Obviously, politics was in your blood your whole life. You didn't even know it. Now, and thank God you do know it now. And so we will definitely have Carrie back. And, you know, we'll
thank
go over
so
it.
Much.
And I'm sure issues from month to month actually, you know, more things arise and come up. So we'd love to have you back.
Thank you. This was great. And I would love to come back and talk with you again.
Thank you. And again, this is webcast. So when you put that out, they can always go to www.saratogabroadcasting.com. And we will also get forward this webcast to today's show so you can put it on your website.
I look forward to that.
And we'll work together on that that great event we'll do in the fall.
Oh, terrific. And yes, for Saratoga Plan.
For Saratoga Plan, we're going to have on our Saturday show, we'll have a little fun in the fall with Carrie. And you'll hear more about that throughout the coming
great.
Week.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Okay, anytime.
Thank you, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Everybody have a good day, and I'll be with you tomorrow morning from 9 to 10 on Talk of the Town.